So we are in Genesis chapters 42 and 43. You know, basically what we're looking at is Jehovah's continued blessing and guidance of Jacob. The key physical fact for the context of these chapters is the continuing what? Somebody in the audience is supposed to speak now. Famine. Famine. We're still in the famine that we were in the previous two chapters. If we start out, if you look at Genesis chapter 41 before we get into 42, last two verses, when the famine was spread over all the face of the earth, then Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, and the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. The people of all earth came to Egypt to buy a grain from Joseph because the famine was severe in all the earth. So, how much of the earth is affected by this famine? All of it. Okay? So when it says people came from all the earth, that means that there was people from North America and South America that that came to Egypt to get grain. Could that be true? Could it be true? Yes. Okay. Who could make it true? God could make it true. Of course, it could be true. It's improbable that that's the case. Just as in when you're studying in the New Testament and it's talking about the whole world and all those things, typically in the New Testament, what world is it talking about? I'm sorry?
Roman.
The Roman world. The Roman world. That was what was known. That was virtually everybody that was receiving information in the New Testament times was centered around what body of water? Mediterranean. Okay. So we're in Egypt. Guess what? That's the Mediterranean also. So I suspect that they're talking roughly about the same thing. There were a lot of trade routes. Could it have gone all the way to China on the Pacific? Yeah, there were trade routes that went from Northern Africa and from Rome later on that went all the way to China. So yes, that's a possibility. But typically what it's talking about when it talks about all the world, it's talking about all the known world to the audience. It's what's under consideration. So we get into chapter 42. Let's look, first section, I just want to look at probably the first three verses. Jacob somehow learns that there's grain available for purchase in Egypt and sends his 10 sons to buy some grain for the family. That's the context of the first three verses. In Genesis 42, 1 through 3. Now Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, and Jacob said to his sons, "Why are you staring at one another?" I was really struck by that statement. If you've ever been a parent, you can appreciate that statement by Jacob. What does it indicate? What were his sons doing?
Nothing.
They weren't doing anything. They were standing around. Dad, where's the food? Okay. So what? Now, obviously, I'm ad-libbing that. We don't know by revelation that's what Jacob. But it's so consistent with parents and kids. I mean, at least in my bringing up my kids, it was that way. And so, when the famine was spread over the face of the earth, then Joseph opened all. We just read that. Why are you staring around? Verse 2, to continue. He said, "Behold, I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down there and buy some for us from that place, so that we may live and not die." Then the 10 brothers of Joseph went down to buy grain for Egypt. So in the first part, in verse 1, he says, Jacob saw. Now, if we take that literally, what does that require of Jacob? Did he see some grain from Egypt? Could he have seen grain from Egypt? It could require that he go to Egypt to literally see with these eyes, okay? But we use that term, and they use that term very loosely, both both literally and figuratively. Okay? If you are a visually oriented person, how do you speak of things? I saw. Okay? Even if you didn't actually see it, even if you only heard about it. And I think that's what we run into here. Okay? Because when he gets down into the latter part of that verse, what does he tell his sons? Behold, I heard, verse 2, I have heard that there's grain in Egypt, okay? Again, the area that Jacob lived in, okay, was, they had trade routes that ran through that area, okay? He literally could have seen a grain sack that was brought from Egypt, okay, by somebody that is going farther north or east, okay? And he could have seen the grain. Somebody could have told him that there was grain in Egypt, which is the most probable thing that happened. Okay. But anyway, he learns that there's grain in Egypt. So what does he do? He says, let's all go down to Egypt, right? No. Why did Jacob stay at home?
He's old.
And those of you that aren't old really can't appreciate that as much as us old guys like me, who is sitting on these three stack chairs here, because I have bad knees and they tend to lock up on me and give me a hard time. He finds out there's grain in Egypt. So he sends his sons, who are currently living with him in the land of Canaan, okay, to Egypt. Verses 4 and 5, chapter 42. But Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, as he had said, I am afraid that harm may befall him. So the sons of Israel came to buy grain among those who were coming, that is, the other people from surrounding nations who were going to Egypt to get grain also, because there was a famine everywhere, okay? For the famine was in the land of Canaan also. So we see that Jacob and his family, they stay in Canaan. They don't go to Egypt at this time. They stay in Canaan. Why does he only send 10 sons? He has one son who he presumes has died, okay? And that was Joseph, okay? They presume, and we'll see a little bit later, that that's exactly what the case was. And he didn't send the other son because Benjamin was
Joseph's brother,
the child of which wife?
Rachel,
who was the favored. She was the favored wife, okay? So guess what? That makes Joseph favored, and we've already seen the results of that. And then it makes Benjamin favored, and he's concerned about that. He's concerned about losing the last of the sons that are very dear to him. Now, I don't mean that to sound like he wasn't concerned about his other sons. He was. And when we get into the latter part of Genesis and we see the blessings of Jacob, and when he talks about the future of his sons and what they're going to be like, it's really interesting. Now, we all know that Jacob is not what?
Dead.
He's not dead. Okay, some of the rest of you besides, what's his name back there?
Steve.
Some of the rest of you can answer too. Don't be afraid. The worst that can happen is what? You'll be wrong. Oh, Kevin? Okay, Kevin's not here tonight, so I can't pick on him. But Kevin, two weeks ago, made a comment about the generations in chapter 37. And some guy with white hair sitting back there behind Chad gave the wrong answer. And Kevin's response to me, who gave the wrong answer, was no. Okay, guess what? I'm still alive. I wasn't shattered by the experience. So don't worry. The whole idea of having a class is to participate. You'll get a whole lot more out of it if you participate. I guarantee it. I'll get a whole lot more out of it than any of you will, because I'm the crazy guy that's sitting up here directing traffic. Okay, so we've looked at verses 4 and 5. We know that Joseph's not dead. He's the number two man in Egypt. We can go back and look at chapter 41, I think it is, or 40, one or the other, just before this, and see that whole thing. Now, continuing on in verses 6 through 8. Now, Joseph was the ruler over the land. He was the one who sold to all of the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. Remind you of anything? Okay, somebody besides Steve, shake your head.
His
yes.
Dream has now become true.
Aha. Going on with verse 7. When Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he disguised himself to them and spoke to them harshly. Okay, he said to them, "Where have you come from?" And they said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." But Joseph had recognized his brothers, although they did not recognize him. One of the commentators I read is Barnes Notes. And Barnes' comment on this was interesting, and it gives us a picture of a little bit. They knew not him, that is, the brothers didn't know Jacob. 20 years make a great change in a youth of 17. So Joseph is about how old now? Somewhere between 35 and 40, okay? And besides this, with his beard, because he's an Egyptian now, and he's wearing a beard, and even more significantly, his head's been shaven, which is typical of the Egyptian officials. His Egyptian attire, his foreign tongue, and his exalted position, who could have recognized the stripling whom 20 years ago they had sold as a slave? Would we have recognized? I doubt it. So we get in now to the next section, and that's chapter 42, verses 9 through 20. And in these verses, 4 points I want you to take note of, okay? Joseph's recollection, the accusation that Joseph makes concerning his brothers, their response to his charge, and the demand he makes for proof, and what it seems, at least in my mind, indicates. Okay, so starting in verse 9, Joseph remembered the dreams which he had about them. And in order to see those dreams, you have to turn back to Genesis 37. The one that specifically applies here is in verses 5 through 8. So I'm going to read that right now. Then Joseph had a dream, Genesis 37, verse 5. And when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. Surprise, shock, startle, right? He said to them, "Please listen to this dream which I have had. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf rose up and also stood erect, and behold, your sheaves gathered around and bowed down to my sheaf." Then his brother said to him, "Are you actually going to reign over us, or are you really going to rule over us?" So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. What's just happened? The fulfillment of that dream is what's just happened. Okay? Now, the second dream also includes whom besides the brothers?
Jacob.
Okay? Yeah. His dad is also included in that. And we'll look at that a little bit later. But we're not going to see that part of the dream fulfilled until what happens? Yeah, till they come to Egypt, okay? Jacob's still in the land of Canaan, so can't be fulfilled at this point in time, okay? And then thirdly, what's the accusation starting in verse 9? And he said to them, "You are spies. You have come to look at the undefended parts of our land." Now, why would he say that?
To keep them back.
What is God, a few years down the road, going to do with 10 Israelites? 12 Israelites, I'm sorry. Where's he going to send them?
To spy out the land
of Canaan, okay? You know, Joseph is just basically saying the same. I'm not saying that they're really, but you know, he's saying you guys came as spies. We think of spies today in a different context entirely. They were, the spies in that day and time were typically looking for what? A place to live, okay? Where there was food, where there was shelter, where they could conduct their business. So this is the accusation that he makes of his brothers, okay? Their response starts in verse 10. Then they said to him, "No, my Lord, but your servants have come to buy food, and we are all sons of one man. We are honest men. Your servants are not spies." Yet he said to them, "No, but you have come to look at the undefended parts of our land." But they said, "Your servants are 12 brothers in all, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is with our father today, and one is no longer alive." So what did they believe about Joseph? That he's dead. Okay? That's what they truly believe, that Joseph was dead. Okay? The brothers claim to be honest men. Joseph claims that they are there as spies to spy out the weaknesses of Egypt. And then he demands for proof. And I thought his demand for proof was interesting. What's it based on? I think it's based on two things. Number one, they said they were honest, okay? And what was one of the claims that they made? There was one son who was where? He was at home. He was still in Canaan. Aha! So, what are they about to ask him to do? Bring your youngest son down to Egypt and let me see him so I can be sure that you're honest, okay? And I think the other thing that motivated him is, and it would motivate us, who did Joseph want to see? He wanted to see Benjamin. Now, I think it goes beyond that, but at this point in time specifically, he wanted to see Benjamin. So starting in verse 14, Joseph said to them, "It is as I said, you are spies, but by this you will be tested by the life of Pharaoh." And again, that doesn't mean that he's putting Pharaoh on the line. He's using Pharaoh as the basis to substantiate what he's about to say. Okay? "You shall not go from this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you that he may get your brother while you remain confined, that your words may be tested whether there is truth in you. But if not, by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies." This life of Pharaoh is kind of like the Jews used to swear by what? The temple, the gold of the altar. You know, one was supposed to. And so that's really what Joseph is doing. But keep in mind, what kind of swearing would an Egyptian make greater than himself? He'd swear by Pharaoh. And so that's what we see Joseph doing. "Surely you are spies," but he put them all together in prison for 3 days, okay, which is what he said he was going to do. "Now Joseph said to them on the third day, 'Do this and live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers be confined in your prison. But as for the rest of you, go, carry grain for the famine of your households.'" And in verse 20, "And bring your youngest brother to me so that your words may be verified." What words may be verified? That there's a younger brother, okay? "And you will not die." And they did so. Okay. Interesting that he sends grain for the family. How much grain did he send? Well, as we're going to see, it's not a whole lot, because what does Joseph want ultimately? He wants his father down in Egypt, okay? So if you keep sending them food, guess what? They're not going to come, okay? So he sends food to them this time, and I don't want to say he shortchanged them, but he didn't give them a whole lot, which is going to require that they do what? come back. Okay? They're going to come back. And you guys will look at that next week. So, you will not look at that next week. We'll look at that in chapter 43. Dummy, you're the one teaching it. Joseph's brothers, okay, return to Canaan. Minus whom? Simeon. Okay, Simeon stays behind. Okay, he's the one that was tied up. One of the interesting things to note, verse 18 of chapter 42. Now Joseph said to them on the third day, do this and live, for I fear God. That word that Joseph is speaking, okay, through the translator, okay, because remember, he's using a translator. He's not speaking Hebrew to them. He's using a translator because he doesn't want them to know what? That he's Joseph. Okay, he doesn't want them to know that. But the interesting thing is, do this and live, for I fear God. Who does he fear? The Hebrew word that's used there is Elohim. Okay? He doesn't say that he fears Ra, or that he fears Isis, or he fears any one of the other multitude of Egyptian gods. He fears a Hebrew God. Now, I don't think, at least the indication in the text is, that his brothers picked up on that at all. Okay? But apparently, that's what Joseph told them. And then in verses, starting again in verse 21, what do the brothers do? They go back to Canaan, less one brother. In verse 21, we find the brothers talking among themselves. And then they said to one another, truly we are guilty concerning our brother. What brother? Joseph. Okay? Because we saw the distress of his soul when he pleaded with us, yet we would not listen. You know, one of the things that you always want to do when you're studying God's word is make sure you look at everything about the context that you're studying. This information concerning the event in Genesis, the 37th chapter, of when Joseph was sold into slavery, is not in the 37th chapter. Yeah. It's additional information that's given us that we can add to our understanding of the account. Therefore, this distress has come upon us. What do they see? Who's doing what to whom? What's the distress?
The new thing was Joseph. We find out that Joseph pleaded before they sold him into slavery. He
okay.
was pleading with them. And they did. They still didn't relent. They still sold him into slavery. And now they're feeling the distress of that.
Yes, they're feeling guilt of that. And that who is getting even with them?
God.
God's getting even with them. And we'll see that again, brought up again. Therefore, this distress has come upon us. Reuben answered them, saying, did I not tell you, do not sin against the boy, and you would not listen? Now comes the reckoning for his blood. You don't find that in chapter 37 either. Something that Reuben did, but not exactly that. So Joseph overhears and understands their conversation. Of course, they don't realize that Joseph understands it. Okay? They did not know, however, that Joseph understood, for there was an interpreter between them. He turned away from them and wept. That is, Joseph turned away and wept. My interpretation of Joseph's behavior is that he wept hearing their repentance and regret in their language as they spoke among themselves. Simeon's taken hostage back, verse 24, but when he returned to them and spoke to them, he took Simeon from them, bound him before their eyes. Then Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain and restore every man's money in his sack and to give them provisions for the journey, that is, the journey back to Canaan, and thus it was done for them. So they're on their way back to Canaan, and they make a stop for the night. And then we're back at Genesis 26. So they loaded their donkeys with the grain and departed from there. As one of them opened his sack, to give his donkey fodder at the lodging place. He saw his money, and behold, it was in the mouth of his sack. Then he said to his brothers, my money has been returned, and behold, it is even in my sack. And their hearts sank, and they turned trembling to one another, saying, what is this that God has done to us? We're going to find out in just a few minutes that it wasn't God that did it. It was somebody else. But they continue to assume what? What's happening to us is because we sold Joseph, our brother, as a slave, okay? A lot of confusion. I mean, they had to be confused. Now, only one of them has opened their bag so far and found their money. When they get back to Canaan, we're going to find everybody else does and finds the same thing.
Observation that interesting to learn a little bit about Joseph and his, well, first off, it's interesting to think about his brothers. Oh, man, I had 2 points and I just lost a bowl.
Welcome to my family.
Joseph's patience, I think, is one thing that's really amazing to me, because especially at that point, after the culmination of everything, to not just jump out and say, look at here I am, and to have patience when he's in jail, have patience when he's in Potiphar's house. Like, he's just continually demonstrated his ability to wait for God's plan and continue to wait. He was in control even as he brought Jacob down from Canaan. I mean, he was in control. At any point, he could have just said, hey, go get your dad and bring him down here. Now, maybe he's into theatrics too, but he certainly demonstrated a lot of patience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Any other comments? Yes.
Well, there was one that I kind of wanted to go back a little bit on because I didn't really catch this until just that previous verse. But in 18, you know, you talked about where Joseph said, for I fear God, and then understanding or his brothers not understanding or picking up on that fact. But then as we read that Joseph was actually speaking to them through an interpreter.
Yes, absolutely. No question about it.
Yeah, so what phrase would that possibly, you know, they didn't pick up on it, is how the interpreter phrased the word God or the language he used for the word of God.
Well, the only...
Should
they have picked up on it?
Well, would or should? Right?
I have no idea, but as we'll go on, we'll find that when the Egyptians talk about, they don't talk about a singular God.
Right.
They talk about gods, plural. In fact, as we all know, the Hebrews were the only ones that had a singular God. Everybody else had lots of gods. No. We can make a lot of fun of that and unique things, but it's not a kind thing to do, so I won't. But everybody else was polytheistic. I mean, there's just absolutely no question about it. So the point that you're trying, I don't know. Absolutely, that's true. I just thought it was unique when I read the Hebrew.
I totally agree, and I'm just wondering, because of the interpreter may have even in his own language said gods, or even that the brothers would have assumed gods versus God, which is why they didn't pick up on. I know it's minutia at the end of the day, so I'm sorry.
But well,
it's just one of those interpreter language.
We're gonna run into it again before we finish chapter 43, where Elohim is used, and again, whether that has specific significance, I don't know, but it struck me. It struck me. But again, he's using an interpreter. Okay, because we haven't got to the point that he identifies himself yet. That'll be next week. They continue to assume they're being punished for selling Joseph. They arrive home, and they tell Jacob their story and discover that all their money has been returned, verses 29 through 35. Now, when they came to their father, Jacob, in the land of Canaan, they told him all that had happened to them. The man, the Lord of the land, spoke harshly with us and took us for spies. But we said to them, we're honest men. And it basically, it's what we've already read, so I'm not going to read it again. But in verse 34, okay, he emphasizes, but bring your youngest brother to me that I may know that you are not spies. Okay? But honest men, and I will give your brother to you, give Simeon back, and you may trade in the land, which I thought was interesting. They can get more food. Now it came about as they were emptying their sacks, and behold, each man's bundle of money had a sack, and we talked about that. So Jacob's response to their accounting is interesting in verses 36 through 38. Their father Jacob said to them, "You have bereaved me of my children. Joseph is no more. Simeon is no more. And you would take Benjamin. All these things are against me." What does Jacob sound like? Woe is me. We may see Jacob in one of his moments of weak faith. We all have those moments. You know, things just aren't going right in our life. He thinks Joseph is dead. Simeon's in bondage. If I send Benjamin down, he's going to be taken from me also. Three of my 12 sons are going to be dead. Could Jacob's statement be a specific shot at Reuben? Why would Reuben be? Why might this be a specific shot at Reuben? He's the oldest. Being the oldest, he's what? He's in charge. When they went down to Egypt, who was responsible for the journey? Reuben was. Okay? So in response, then Reuben spoke to his father, saying, "You may put my two sons to death if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my care, and I will return him to you." So what's Reuben saying? Trust me, Dad. Let me take Benjamin back there. What's the probability that, based on the things that happened in the first trip, or didn't happen, that's going to happen? What has Jacob decided? Yeah. Some commentators infer from this. I am not the one that does that. But some commentators infer that there's some implication that Joseph has become suspicious, or excuse me, Jacob has become suspicious about what happened to Joseph from this commentary right here. I don't feel that way about it, but that's certainly a possibility. He was concerned, that he's going to lose three of his sons, and especially he's going to lose his other favored son, his baby. Yes.
Just we go into the next chapter, and my point that I forgot to make. The brothers, for the longest time, they sold Joseph into slavery. But to them, it was having someone else do the killing of him rather than them having to do it. They were,
right.
For all intents and purposes, they were saying, Joseph is going off. Yes, he's going to be a slave, but he is no longer going to live. Because when they go down to Egypt, they truly think that he's dead.
Oh, absolutely.
Not that he's a slave somewhere, floating around somewhere, but that
right.
He's deceased and that blood is on their head. And it changes kind of then your perspective as they go down and have all these interactions. They're not looking or anticipating or thinking there's any chance in the world that Joseph is still alive and orchestrating these things. Which to me, I always think, they've got to see their brothers. They got to see some resemblance. They knew him for a good amount of time. But in reality, they never crossed their mind because they had sworn that he was dead. And so when they told their dad that he was dead, they were lying, but they weren't lying. Does that make sense? I mean, they didn't kill him, but they know that he was going to be dead. So it kind of changes things a little bit, because I always thought, they're holding this secret in for so long against their dad, but they truly felt guilty of his.
Oh, absolutely, no question about it. There was a great deal of guilt, as most of the time, at least for myself. I can't speak for any of you. When I have guilt, What do I feel about that? Why do I have guilt? Because I deserve. I'm sorry, somebody said it. I heard you. Okay, I'm sorry.
Punishment.
Punishment. I deserve punishment. The reason I feel guilty is because I've done something that I should not have done. And as a result of doing something I'm not supposed to do, I should expect to receive some type of punishment. That's pretty typical. And it sounds to me like that's the expectation they have. This happened. Okay, we got our money given back to us. What in the world is going on here? I mean, somebody that you trade with, you get the grain. You take the grain. Guess what? The money that you took to buy the grain is in your bag. What do you suspect? Oh, the guy that I bought the grain from, he's just a good-hearted guy. And, I mean, we all feel that way when we buy something, right? You go over to Home Depot and buy some flowers, and as you get home, you find that the flowers are all in your bag, and all your money's in the bag too. Aren't you a little suspicious? What's going on here? Okay, and that's kind of the situation that I think that they didn't understand. Okay, verse 1, chapter 43, the famine's still going on. Now the famine is severe in the land. It was not accidental or coincidental that Jacob had to send his sons to Egypt a second time for food. It was God's immutable will. Who did God use to ensure that Jacob had to send his sons to Egypt a second time? The guy that's in charge down in Egypt. Because he didn't give them enough food to last very long. They had to come back, okay? Think about all the events which happened in the Old Testament that could not have happened as they did without this move of Jacob and his family to Egypt. Think about it. Is God capable of changing his plans and doing it a different way? Absolutely. Okay. But this was God's plan. That's why we have it revealed to us. That's why we have Genesis chapter 42 and 43 and 41. That's why it's all there. That's why we have the Old Testament. This is God's plan. It wasn't an accident. It wasn't coincidental. Back in verse 3, that's where I want to go. Judah spoke to him, okay, however saying, the man solemnly warned us, you shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. Why? Was it only because he wanted to verify that they had a younger brother and that they were honest men? He wanted to see his brother. Okay, I'm convinced of that. Okay, it doesn't tell me that, but I'm convinced that's part of it. Judah tells Jacob that they will not go unless Benjamin comes with him. If you send our brother with us, we will go down and buy you food. Why does he say buy you food to Jacob? Who's responsible for the family? Jacob is, okay? It's his family. You want food for yourself and for your family? Send us to Egypt. We'll get it, okay? If you want us to go to Egypt, you have to give us who? You guys are supposed to participate in this.
Benjamin.
Benjamin, thank you. Okay, yeah, you got to send Benjamin, okay? Then Israel said, why did you treat me so badly by telling the man whether you still had another brother? Okay, but they said, and this relates, Matt, to your question earlier of how much did they know. But they said, the man questioned particularly about us and our relatives, saying, is your father still alive? Have you another brother? This info is not mentioned in the earlier narrative. Okay, so we So we answer his question, could we possibly know that he would say, bring your brother down? And the answer to that is no. How would they know? How would they know? And then starting in verse 8, Judah agrees to be surety for Benjamin rather than whom? Reuben. Reuben's already said he would, okay? But there's additional negotiation going on between the brothers and their dad, okay? Judah said to his father Israel, interesting that this is not how we think of Jacob most of the time once we get to this point and he's had 12 sons, okay? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Joseph called Israel.
He's not.
Jacob.
That's his name.
Oh. It goes back and forth, though.
Oh, I know. It goes back and forth. It just seems funny.
I agree. I don't know the significance here. Yeah. Okay. Send the lad with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, we as well as you and our little ones. You know, hey, look, Dad, we're going to go back to Egypt. We will get the grain that we need in order to survive. But you have to let us have Benjamin. There is no other option. Now, we don't read that here, but that's basically what he's telling him. I myself will be surety for him. What does that mean? Yeah, he goes on to say, you may hold me responsible for him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame before you. How long? Forever. Okay? By this proclamation, this is my comment, it's not reading. By this proclamation, Judah takes leadership of the next journey from Reuben. And then in verse 10, for if we had not delayed, and this is kind of a shot at whom? At Jacob. Okay? If we had not delayed, surely by now we could have returned twice. We could have gone to Egypt twice. Okay? If somebody hadn't withheld somebody else being allowed to go. Now, in our modern society, that's just how catty we would be, too. Jacob is persuaded to send Benjamin and more, starting in verse 11. Then their father Israel said to them, if it must be so, then do this. Number one, take some of the best products of the land in your bags and carry down to the man as a present a little balm, a little honey, aromatic gum, myrrh, pistachio nuts, and almonds. Pistachio nuts and almonds really sounds good. Yeah, but it's not. It's the snacks that go around the outside of the plate where the real substance is. Verse 12, the number two. Take double money in your hand and, in other words, twice what you took last time, and take back in your hand the money that was returned to you. So they've got three times as much money as they had last time in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was a mistake. And then number three, take your brother also and arise, return to the man. That, you know, that had to be a terrible challenge for Jacob to make that decision. And then we see Jacob responding a prayer in verse 14. And may God grant you compassion in the sight of the man, that is Joseph, so that he will release to you your other brother and Benjamin. And then finally, we see resolution from Jacob. And as for me, if I am bereaved of my children, I am bereaved. Today we would say, I think, God's will be done. So the men took this present, verse 15, and they took double the money in their hand and Benjamin, and then they arose and went down to Egypt and stood before Joseph. And I haven't been watching the clock at all. I can't even see it. There's glare on it.
10 minutes till.
48.
10 till, huh? Oh, so I got...
Minus 5 minutes?
Oliver, what you want me to do?
Hurry.
Hurry. Okay. Joseph welcomes his brothers to his house, verses 16 through 24. When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to his house steward, "Bring the men into the house and slay an animal and make ready, for the men are to dine with me at noon." Joseph's brothers fear a confrontation over the money that was returned to them, and especially so because they are going to Joseph's house, okay, not what we would think of as being his office or his place of business. Again, keep in mind, they don't know who Joseph is, okay? Verse 17, so the man, that is Joseph's steward, did as Joseph said and brought the men to Joseph's house. Now, the men were afraid because they were brought money. They were brought to Joseph's house, and they said it is because of the money, which they had already blamed on God, which was returned to them. In verses 19 through 22, Joseph's brothers explained to Joseph's steward about finding the money on the first trip. Hey, we found this in our bags. We don't know where it came from. In verse 23, we find the answer for that. Okay? Joseph's steward understands their fear and reassures them that the money is not an issue because he knew about it. He said, "Be at ease, do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has given you treasure in your sacks. I had your money." Who put the money back in the sacks? Not Joseph, Joseph's steward. Joseph's steward, who they're talking to. Then he brought Simeon into them, Simeon who had been in jail, okay? Then the man brought the men into Joseph's house and gave them water. They washed their feet. He gave them donkey's fodder. Typical hospitality of the Middle East in that day and time. Verse 25, so they prepared a present for Joseph's coming at noon, and they heard that they were to eat a meal with him. So the present, if you remember, did I mark? Earlier they talked about the present. Joseph had, Jacob had told them about this present to gather, and that's the, I think that's the present that is presented here to Joseph. Okay. Verse 27, Joseph's talking with his brothers through whom? Interpreter. Okay. Then he asked them about their welfare. Is your old father well, of whom you spoke? Is he still alive? Your servant, our father, is well. He is still alive. They bowed down to offer homage again. Okay? As he lifted his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, "Is this your youngest brother?" When Joseph blesses Benjamin, he is overcome by emotion and must step away. Verse 29, and he said, "May God, Elohim, again, be gracious to you, my son." So Joseph hurried out, for he was deeply stirred by his brother and sought to wept. Then he washed his face, came out. He controlled himself and served. The meal is served. Verse 32. So they served him by himself, that is Joseph. They served the Hebrews by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with them by themselves, that he kept, because the Egyptians would not eat, it says bread, but it actually means a meal, for that is loathsome to the Egyptians. And the scholars that I read indicated that's because they ate beef, which is symbol of Isis, one of their gods. Now they were seated before him, that is, they were seated before Joseph, the firstborn according to his birthright, and the second, and the youngest according to his youth, and the men looked at one another in astonishment. Jacob told each of them by age where to sit. How would the second in command in Egypt know that? There's no reason to believe that he would. Had to confuse the brothers, okay? Surprise. Well, Joseph knew what order they were. And then in verse 34, he took portions to them from his own table And this is significant. But Benjamin's portion was five times as much as any of theirs. There are 3 points of honor given in this, given to his Hebrew brothers, to be noted in verse 34. Number one was what? He, the number two in Egypt, took portions to them. He served them. Okay? The second point being, he took portions from where? From his own table. Okay? From his own table, which was separate from the table of the Hebrews and separate from the table of the Egyptians. Okay? He gave them portions from his own table. And then finally, Benjamin's portion was five times as much as any of the others. The serving of the larger portion and from Joseph's table was a sign of special honor for that individual. And then the chapter ends, so they feasted and drank freely with him. I got close. Thank you very much. Anybody have any other questions? Grab me after class. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think it's kind of interesting why the money was put back in the sack. Because to me, Joseph wanted to see if they were honest enough to bring it back. Oh.
I don't know. I don't know why it was put back in the sack. Just, it's a guess. It's not revealed. Ergo, I don't know. Thank you. Come in. Don't hide.